It's Halloween at the Puppet Parent Podcast. We're talking about our favorite scary puppet shows, the most famous horror puppets on film, and our family's Halloween traditions. It's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Puppet Parent Podcast.
My name is Z.
My name is Chad.
We are parents.
We're puppeteers.
And we have a podcast.
Yay, and you can check us out on puppetparentpodcast.com. We are streaming live if you want to watch the video version over on Facebook for whatever reason.
Well, you would be able to see my adorable bow for my cat costume because yes. I am Gigi the cat from Kiki's Delivery Service.
That's right.
Because it's Halloween almost. It's the Friday before Halloween, and that means that if you have a kid in school, they might be dressing up for Halloween, or maybe they are dressing up as a character from a book.
You know what? You know what I learned in script writing class in college? That, you know, Gigi starts with a J, Kiki starts with K, J comes before K, but they're close together. It's like the names also like resemble the relationships of the characters in the film, but J comes before K because Gigi and like J represents like the her childhood, and then K is. Kim's comes after Jay because it's moving on and she's like going to the end of the alphabet, I guess, or something like that anyway.
Now, I'm so sorry to put a wrench into this, but I'm pretty sure it's spelled with a G.
Spelled with a J.
It's spelled with a J. Are you sure about this?
100%.
I just want to say that even though I don't know how it's spelled, I have this very adorable Kiki's Delivery Service pencil. Ooh. Is one of my favorite things.
That's a pencil.
It is.
It looks
a
like
pencil.
A pen. It's mechanical.
No, you can. It is a mechanical pencil, wow. And you can refill the lead. And I love it.
That's amazing.
So yes.
So it's Halloween. Our neighborhood. We're in Astoria, Queens. Our neighborhood is famous, ladies and gentlemen. We are one of those neighborhoods where people drive in and park their cars, sometimes double park, so that they can
trick or treat
in our neighborhood.
Trick or treat. Trick or treat on Halloween. We just recently watched Disney's Halloween Treat, which is my favorite thing to watch at Halloween, and I've made it a tradition with the kids, and they like it. So that's one of the few.
It's like the one Disney thing they like.
Media things, yes. I'm like, I can infiltrate Disney somehow. So yes, they not only tolerate it, they enjoy it. They look forward to it.
Wow.
Yes, we might watch it again this weekend. Twice a year is not a bad thing. So Disney's Halloween Treat.
You're really into
it. Yes. It's all the best. It's like the best clip show ever. It's just so good.
It is like a clip show, but it does say at the end, this represents 50 years of Disney's animation. Because there's clips from Snow White and Sleeping Beauty.
And Fantasia.
And it has Captain Hook himself, the actor who plays Captain Hook, is dressed up as the magic mirror and kind of narrates things. It does some interstitials bemoaning how the villains always get the short end of the stick.
Oh, yeah, he's the magic mirror. Well, okay. So if you are a Disney Halloween Treat fanatic, like me, then you might realize or understand that there are different versions of Disney Halloween Treat. There is the version with the talking puppet pumpkin. The lip sync is terrible. I'm sorry if you did the pumpkin, but I have a feeling that they did not hire a real puppeteer to do the pumpkin. And then they re-edited it with the pumpkin not talking and with the magic mirror. And then they re-edited it again with just the pumpkin and no magic mirror and just narration. There's been lots of versions of Disney Halloween Treat, but there are some stitched together versions that you can find online that kind of give you like a basic understanding of what it was that we grew up with.
So it's like an hour program.
Ish, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Came out in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Right? And it was a TV special, like the Disney, not the Disney Afternoon, but like the Disney Sunday.
The Magical World of Disney.
Thank you. It was like 7 o'clock on Sundays. The whole family gathered around the TV.
Unless you were an only child, and then it was just you at the TV.
Oh, that's so sad. Michael Eisner, who was the CEO of Disney, does like a little skit with the masked characters of like Mickey and Minnie and so on. And this one was very Halloween-y. And yeah, and Z looks forward to watching it, even if nobody else is watching it also every single year. Yeah, if nobody watches it with you, it could be like just like you were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, look, this is like me, alone in my home. My parents are somewhere.
Yeah, well, let's, you know, I would much rather watch it with my children, which is what we do. And I especially love the Gorilla on the Loose Donald Duck episode. They show that short, cartoon short, and the...
it kind of gives gorillas a bad rap. And
you know what? It's funny. and then the Huey, Dewey, and Louie trick-or-treating short with the witch. And that's where that trick-or-treat, trick-or-treat song comes from. And it's so good. So good. It's just like classic, great Disney. Ah, yeah. I have embraced Disney in my heart in a way that I did not realize I was going to as an adult.
You're one of those adults. You're one of those millennial adults who really loves Disney.
I do. And I didn't like Disney for a while because it was cool. It was uncool to like Disney when I was, I don't know, in my early 20s. I was like, oh, Disney, they're the evil corporation. And you know what? Maybe they are, but... I have come to a new place of understanding that actually I love all of that stuff and I just don't care. So
I mean, they hire the best people. So, I mean, they're supporting artists.
Listen, if anyone from Disney is watching this and you need somebody to do something like some voiceover or something, I would be honored. I'm just saying, yeah. I love it. I just love all of it. Like Good. The Rock doing his bit in Moana. Oh my God. Amazing. Like, amazing. And the girl who plays Moana, amazing.
I mean, she basically is Moana. If you've seen her in real life singing the song, it's like they basically took her likeness and put it into the computer, which is amazing.
It's amazing. Yes. Just amazing.
She's so talented. So, let's talk. Let's talk today because we have a theme for this, for season three of the Puppet Parent podcast. And I'm all about themes. Okay. So, last time we did Danger. Okay, we talked about the most dangerous shows we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to talk about scary puppets. Okay, and there's a lot to talk about because puppets and scariness have gone together like a reverse handshake for since the beginning of puppetry, let's say.
Okay.
So, what constitutes a scary puppet show? Okay, is my question to you, because there have been lots of different scary things, and sometimes there'll be a scary moment in a show, you know, for drama or what have you, but what constitutes a scary puppet show, you think?
Well, you know what? I had a show that immediately came to mind when you told me what the topic was, and that was a specific show that I thought was scary because it was intense. You know, but because when you first told me that it was scary, I thought, well, we just did Danger. Isn't that the same thing? And no, you clarified. You said, no, they're different. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay. I mean, I think when you can relate to the show in a way where it feels like, well, I don't know. I get very emotionally invested in content in general. Like, yes. We're watching Squid Game right now, and I'm, like, a mess. But I appreciate how well it's done. And the first episode, just FYI, is the hardest to get through. It gets easier as you go.
Like all Asian TV shows.
You told me that might be the case. And so I appreciated that, so I have continued on the journey. But if you hadn't told me that, I don't know that I would have watched more than one episode.
Second episode. No violence, really, at all. It was just all like a build-up.
Spoiler, maybe a little bit.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. But you too can watch something intense like that if you are somebody like me who wants to appreciate it and be able to talk about it at the office.
So it's a different type of feeling. So you don't feel like you, the audience member, that your life is in peril, like we talked about last week.
Right.
Or last week, it was our last episode.
Or somebody might get hurt. Right. I don't feel like somebody might get hurt.
Right. It's more the feeling of horror and dread of something bad is going to happen on stage.
Yes.
And you're feeling those feelings.
I think for me, it evokes the fight or flight feeling inside. And if anybody ever wondered, which one is he? It's flight. Just so you know, well, actually more, it's more hiding. Hide. Is that one of them? Is that like flight? That's what will happen. I will hide.
It's like that question, would you rather have the superpower to fly or turn invisible? You would say, I want to hide. Give me the hide power.
Because I don't trust that I would be a good flyer when it comes down, when it, like, the moment is right and I needed to, like, really do it.
Yeah.
But invisibility, I got you. I can stay still and quiet for a very long time. I honed those hide-and-go-seek skills. I'm in.
Awesome.
But anyway, so that's what it does for me, is, like, if it's a scary show, it's going to evoke that sense of heightened anxiety where I'm, like, thinking to myself, oh, my goodness, if I was in that situation, what would I do? Ooh, I would hide. Mm-hmm. That's always my go-to.
Yes.
Or not go in, or, you know, whatever
don't
it is.
Don't go in there.
Don't go in there. Why are you still here? Right?
Yeah,
why?
True. Although, you know, I will say my favorite types of media are films or shows where the characters make smart decisions. But if it's scary, you can still have your characters make smart decisions, but it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Or something else happens that they didn't take into account. Or, you know, there's a really good reason that they have to go in there. Like even though they're smart and they know that it's going to be bad, they're like, but we have to go. You know, so-and-so is trapped in there. We can't leave them. You know, the key to get out is in there. We have to go get it. There's no other way. We talked about our options. There's no time. We got to go in there. Open the door. And then, and then you know, you're building up the suspense and dread. Suspense, as I think Alfred Hitchcock talked about suspense, because he was the master of the film suspense. He said that, I mean, he has this great example about, like, if you just have a scene and there's a bunch of people sitting in a cafe and a bomb goes off, that might be horrifying, but it's not suspenseful. It's not scary. Now, if you show the audience, do the scene again, if you show the audience that there is a bomb, a ticking bomb somewhere in this scene, and then do pan back and then show the audience, now you're anticipating something. You're thinking about, oh my God, this could go off at any time.
And you know something that the characters don't know.
It's more like the audience, like, the has information,
yeah,
that makes you feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. And the more time passes, the more suspenseful it gets, and the more, like, you're feeling, like, this rising feeling of, like, oh, something bad is gonna happen, gets up there. And I feel like we've seen a lot of shows that do that really well, or should do that really well. So let's, before we talk about the scariest shows we've seen, let's talk about some scary puppets in history. Because there have been so many iconic scary puppets.
Ooh, I have one in my head.
Oh, why don't you tell us?
Okay, from the 4-hour long special of Alice in Wonderland that was broadcast on TV in the 80s. Maybe I've mentioned this in this podcast before. Clearly, it was extraordinarily influential. Carol Channing, I was exposed to her, Sammy Davis Jr. Mm. So many amazing people were in that. But the Jabberwocky, which was in both Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, and had more screen time in Through the Looking Glass. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
So it was a puppet. Can you describe what it looks like?
It was like a walk around dragon puppet, but you could see, like, the ooze. Like, it was like oozy. Mm. Like, it had, like, goo on it. Like, maybe it was, like, the drool. I haven't actually rewatched it in a while. And had wings and sharp teeth and, I mean, claws that catch, like, all the things that it say. Like it, when they describe the Jub-Jub bird or whatever, and then they transition into what the Jabberwocky looks like, and you're just like, that is a thing of nightmares. Like, when I saw it, and then there's fake lightning happening in the background, I'm just like, oh, my God. You know, it's, like, scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. Scary.
So that scared little child Z.
Yes.
I remember Alice was stuck in a web or something. Like, she couldn't move, or there was some kind of thing that was stopping her.
I think we need
to
rewatch it.
Okay. So we're going to go on YouTube after this. We're going to look for that specific scene.
Oh, no. I want to rewatch the whole thing, but anyway.
So there have been so many different iconic scary puppets,
okay,
right? And we don't have it as bad as clowns. Like, the scary clown thing is just, like, affects actual clowns in a negative way. The scary clown stereotype hurts actual clowns from getting actual work. Scary puppets is kind of like, nah, Yeah, you can have your scary puppets, you can have your regular puppets, but there's something about puppets that lends itself to being scary.
Well, this could go both ways, because I find puppets that are very badly performed also scary. But that's, I guess that's a different thing.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Saw movie series.
Oh, yeah.
Has a scary puppet.
Oh, Chucky. Right?
Would you like to play a game? Chucky from Child's Play. They just freshly rebooted that as a series, I think, on a streaming service.
Gremlins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, big puppets. The puppets from Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
Those big, giant dinosaurs were puppets. That's why they look so good.
Oh, what about Puppet Master?
Yes.
There were puppets in that.
Okay, all right, so without looking.
I'm not.
How many Puppet Master films have there been?
Oh, boy.
This is 2021 right now,
I'm
going to
say
many?
Nine.
Pretty close. A little higher.
10. 11?
11 Puppet Master
11.
films.
I mean, I was feeling pretty good about 9.
That's pretty good.
I knew there was a lot, but you know why I know that there was a lot?
Yes.
Is because I curated a Puppets on Film Festival at BAM for 4 years, and I had to create the lineup, because that's what a curator does, and I always considered Puppet Master, but it was just never
good,
quite...
Good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also considered Child's Play, but we never... that's what it's called, right? The Chucky
yes.
movies? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we never quite delved into, like, the full-on horror of it. Like, I was cool with Gremlins because it's, like, funny horror. And Chucky did jump the shark into funny horror, you
yes.
know. But I don't know. We just didn't get there quite. It started to feel like, well, is this the 80s horror puppet festival? So we wanted to... That's a different festival. We could do that festival.
You could do a whole weekend of programming.
The Thing, that's a puppet.
Right. Many, many amazing. So any characters made by Stan Winston in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
A lot of puppets, because special effects had to be puppetry.
And
right?
Shout out to the Stan Winston online virtual school. You can take classes and learn how to do all that stuff. It's so cool. His son, Matt Winston, super nice guy. And he helps to run all that. And he's just great.
Yeah. So even today, when there's computer graphics have come such a long way, seeing an actual puppet on screen or the actors interacting with an actual puppet, there's something about that that you can't replace. And I love that there continues to be not just like throwbacks to the scary puppets of the 80s, you know, but like we're taking it in bold new directions.
Well, also, you know, I could keep listing things. The Podlings, when they get their essence drained from Dark Crystal, I mean, it's like shattering, like when that happens in the original Dark Crystal. And then the Age of Resistance, there's some really intense moments in that, too. So yeah.
Let's jump back to live theater.
Okay.
Because that's what we do.
Right.
Our company, Wonderspark Puppets, we are a live theater company. We don't do films. There's so many scary puppets on films that work so great on film. But live theater spookiness and scariness, what is, because this is our little segment, I liked it when, so you got to start with I liked it when. What was the scariest show you've ever seen?
Oh, ever.
And if you need a minute, I will say I've seen some scary slam pieces, not like low quality. No, there was this great effect. I still have like a little mini poster of it. There's this great show by, I think it was Sarah Frechette, The Haunted Projectile.
Yeah.
Which was a slam piece. It was a shadow piece, and I really liked it when there's this great setup where these two mischievous little girls go into this haunted house, and they're knocking stuff over, and there's ghosts, and they're like, ooh, they're into it, and this creepiness happening. But they don't care. They're kind of like still mischievous and, you know, being like really bad kids. And then they get caught, and then one of them gets transformed into a ghost, and then the other one stops being mischievous and cool and bad and starts to be scared. And that's when I, the audience member, that's when I got scared too, because I was like, you know, okay, they're like mischievous and like, you know, they're like rebel girls. They don't care. They're not scared. And then when they do get scared, it's like, ooh, it's a big deal. And then they have to try and escape the horror house while their friend, who is a ghost now, is figuring out what that's like and eventually helps them escape. But it was cool. It was a great show. It was like one of the better slam pieces that I've seen.
And Sarah's awesome. She's located in the Portland, Oregon area, but she does stuff all over. And actually, this weekend, she's going to be doing Nightshade, which is her shadow puppetry company, at Minneapolis, in Minneapolis, with Open Eye Theater at the Back End Museum.
Wow. Well, thank you,
Happen
Puppet
to
Happenings.
Know all of those facts. So, you know what? It's really hard for me to qualify a most of all time thing, but I mean, I can tell you what
just
came to mind.
One. I mean, that wasn't the scariest thing I've ever seen on stage, but you know, I like that show.
Okay, so the thing that came to mind was the show that I saw at the Charleville-Mézières Puppetry Festival in France in September 2019, and I might have mentioned this as well in the podcast in a previous episode, but that show was called Gimme Shelter, and it's by Compagnie Yokai, but in French, so it's like Compagnie Yokai. Or something.
Yokai?
Yokai.
Yokai is like
Company.
Japanese for monster.
Right. So they're cool. They, I think at least some of them are graduates from the Charleville Puppetry Institute there, which is this amazing, very well-respected 3-year program. They only accept students every 3 years. Oh, they only accept students who are between a certain age. So I'm too old to go. I'm not going to France anyways, but I, anyway, it's like a big deal to go to the Charleville Institute of Puppetry
and the show.
I'm like in France all of a sudden.
Just give us the goods.
The show takes place in two parts. The audience is separated into two different sections. When you enter, you either are going to sit in these amusement park ride cars that are like parked and look disheveled, and everything looks like it's been like left to rot for a year, or you are going to go inside of this very like run down looking metal shed that's like in the middle, and there's like, you know, fog machines happening and low lighting and
can you see out of the shed? Can you see the audience members sitting in the cars?
Only when this one door is opened.
Ooh.
So I went into the shed first.
You went into the shed.
You are told where you're going.
Right.
You do
okay.
not get to choose. And I was happy about that. I was happy about going in first because I don't know. It just made me feel like excited. Like, what's going to happen? And so already everything is very eerie and spooky and like, and it looks very run down, which I love. Like, what is that called when we love things that are like, they look like they're falling apart and we take pictures of it and stuff? Like, like we used to go places and take pictures of things. Like, that was one of the things we bonded over when we were younger. So anyways.
Well, you didn't have to break into this one to,
No, I didn't mention that. But anyways, but it was very reminiscent of the vibe of like early 2000 me, and like the stuff I was really into, you know, like finding like decrepit old, abandoned things. Like, everything felt abandoned. That's the word I'm trying to go for. So you're in the shed and then they close the door and it is pitch black. And you are sitting on these like tiny little steps and you're very, very close to each other. And then all of a sudden you see that there's like a dude, like a guy, but he's probably been in this shed situation for a long time. He's not looking well. You know, and that's the show. Like, this is part of the show. And I'm not going to give everything away, but clearly he has not left this space in a very long time. And his objects start speaking to him. And it's creepy and it's cool. And you start to feel this like feeling of like schizophrenia or anxiety. Like, he's definitely paranoid. He's definitely hearing voices. And it's clear, like the toy Fisher Price phone that's like dirty and decrepit kind of like rolls out, and it's like that he answers it and it's like, when was the last time you went outside? And and you're like, oh my God. And this is all pre-pandemic. And so then The door eventually, like, there's some strobe light action that happens. It's really cool. There's some, like, magic tricks that kind of happen that make you feel like, oh my goodness, how'd they do that? That's awesome. And then the door slowly opens, because while you've been inside, there's a whole other show that's happening outside that correlates with the show that is happening for you inside, because everything is, it's kind of like Sleep No More-ish, you know, that there's a full show happening and that you're a part of one part of it. Mm. So then the door opens.
That's a good that's a good way to sell tickets. You're like, I have to see this show again.
No, you get to see the second part. You switch. There's a part where you switch. And then this bunny, full costume, walk around, dirty pink bunny, comes slowly walking in from outside. And you can see the other people and the other audience members. You can kind of barely see them through the doorway, this narrow doorway that's to the right. And you're like, oh my God, I see other people. And they're like, oh. And you're like, oh God. And then the bunny is plodding in. And I mean, it's just, it's really intense. You can find footage of the show and some really great documentary interviews from the creators, Company Yokai, on the internet and on Vimeo and stuff. And then eventually you switch and you get to watch it from the outside. And the outside, it feels like, oh my goodness, was there like a radioactive bomb that went off? And then these are the people that are left. You know, like, what happened? The animals are clearly, because there's animals that have been, that are brought to life through puppetry, but then they're they are like pelts, like they're it's not like a puppet animal, like how we typically make an animal. It's puppet. It's like they took the pelt of a raccoon and then made an animal out, a puppet out of that. And it's like, whoa, that's intense. And all of it was intense. And you're sitting in these like decrepit old amusement park rides, and it all just felt really weird and cool, and I loved it. And then the pandemic happened like less than a year later, and I was just like, oh my God, that show. And I just kept thinking about that show, and they know I'm a fan. Like, we have talked, I have shouted them out a few times, and that show just keeps ringing for me in my heart. I heard the song Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones the other day, and I was like, oh, that show. So everything, because that song also plays a part in the show as well. So everything about the show is like the aesthetic that I love, the creep factor that I love, the feeling like you're in it, you know, like immersiveness, which I've always loved, because my undergraduate thesis project was an immersive theater piece before it was cool.
That's how we met.
It's Yay. True. It's true. And so anyway, that's my show. Gimme Shelter by Company Yokai.
All right. Well, we gave some examples of scary puppet shows. Okay, let's just put those aside. Let's just talk about a show. Let's talk about the scariest puppet show.
Is it one that we did?
Scary. No, it's not that we don't. No. We have rules because we do children's theater, so we can never go super scary. We can go slightly scary, but not even really. You know, we can have like little moments and then break it up with levity. Now let's talk about a show that we saw that made us feel something, which is always a successful show. Let's talk about the show Jerk.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. And I saw that again in French. Oh, that show was scary.
That show was the scariest show I've ever been in. And we've been in some immersive stuff. Like when we saw an immersive Hansel and Gretel at the New Victory.
I thought about that one.
That was scary. That was great. It was a children's show. I loved that show. Super scary, so where you're good. Going up and down all around the New Vic. It was amazing.
I'm pretty sure that one was by Catherine Wheels, by the way.
Take all that, like, all that amazing big budget stuff out the window, because Jerk was the scary, like, the most intense horror show, like, live theater we have ever seen. I'm just going to speak for you.
It was so scary, I forgot you were there with me watching it.
People, you said, like, people were throwing up.
Somebody did leave and had to go throw up. Yeah, in France.
And guess what? The entire show takes place with one person sitting on a folding chair like we are doing now, with like two or three puppets, hand puppets. That's the entire show, and it was the most horrifying thing
It was.
That I've ever. And I was thinking, like, you know, we watched a production of Bird Box at the Japanese Institute, where they're talking about a guy getting skinned alive, and I was like, all right, that was pretty terrifying.
Oh, the Japanese,
the Japan Institute,
Japan Society, Japan and Society. It was Thank Nightingale. You. It was something about night. It wasn't called Bird Box.
Maybe it wasn't, but it was something like that, or mm-hmm. Bird Machine.
No, that's Concrete Temple Theater.
Oh, you're
no,
right,
it
you're
was
right.
Tom Lee was involved with it. It was something about a nightingale.
Okay, thank mm-hmm. you. But this is like it was so intense that it made me feel like the way when you're watching like an intensely horror thing and you feel the horror in your gut.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. it was just the
that. Oh, I'm sorry. I cannot contain. I cannot contain myself. We got to pause for the cause. So, the show has not even started yet. You walk in. The guy who's going to perform the whole show is already sitting in the chair with the suitcase at his feet, just sitting there,
facing the audience. And we're close.
We're close.
We're in a small space.
Right. We saw it at PS 122 in the small black box theater that's around the side of the building, if you know New York City and like theater spaces. So anyway, it's small. The show, it's time for the show to start. He's been sitting there this whole time, not moving, really, not doing anything. But you feel uncomfortable. There's an intensity about it. Then they pass out a large piece of paper to each person in the audience. I think it might have even been laminated or it was like nice, like cardstock, and you are directed to read it. So you sit, and then for about 5 minutes, you get to read about a horrible, true incident that happened in Texas to some kids. And it is very horrifying. And then you pass all the papers back, and then you watch the show play out, and it's okay, now you go.
So I couldn't find the name of the performer, but he did such a wonderful job.
I can get it for you.
I know you can do it. Basically, he is both the narrator and plays different characters. You only have two hands when you're doing hand puppets, so there's three characters on stage, basically at all times. There is a creepy panda bear that he holds, which is the known serial killer, whose name I will tell you. Dean Corll.
Oh, yeah.
And then his two teenage accomplices. And sometimes he plays a narrator. Sometimes he is one of the teenage accomplices. Sometimes he plays the victim. But there's always two puppets on his hands. And they do horrible things. And it really happened. And the way that he tells it is horrifying. He's an amazing actor, talking straight to you. And his vivid descriptions. And the play was written by Dennis Cooper. Amazing writer.
Mm-hmm.
The vivid descriptions of what is happening along with his physicality just made my insides churn. And, are we going to show a little screenshot?
Jonathan Capdevielle.
Capdevielle?
Probably, yes. Dennis Cooper and Giselle Vienne.
She's the director.
Yeah. And here is a picture.
If you look at a picture of it, looks like it could be a show for kids, right? Because his hand puppets, cute little panda bear. Oh, there is a horrible man inside that panda bear, and I will not tell you what happens in the show, but it just proved to me, you know, like I feel like what we do, you know, is true. Like, you don't need much to affect the audience. You just need great physicality, you know, a clear script, and great acting. That's everything that was there.
And I want to give a shout-out to Mark Russell from Under the Radar, who brought that show to New York City and basically broke us. I couldn't speak afterwards. I felt nauseous. It was so intense, but I'm so glad I saw it. And then when we were in France, I was like, I have to see it again because it's one of the best puppet shows I've ever seen. And I saw it in French, and then somebody who was with me said, I don't understand why that person left to throw up. Do you think they have food poisoning? And I was like, no, you don't understand French. But if you did, you would also feel that way. It is so disturbing. So I wish you had seen it in English. I'm sorry that you didn't, but it's horribly disturbing.
Yay.
Yeah.
Very graphic show.
Did you mention about the ventriloquism aspect of it?
I did not.
So that's also another interesting aspect about the show, is it's the most interesting use of ventriloquism that I've ever seen. And, you know, one of my favorite ventriloquists is Jay Johnson, and he had this amazing show called The Two and Only.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the art of ventriloquism in the same way that, like, magicians talk about the art of magic, the history of it. And he speaks that way about ventriloquism, and it's so great and so cool. And it makes you feel like, oh, wow, I wonder what I could do with ventriloquism. Something that's not just like a stand-up routine. And this was a wonderful example of ventriloquism being used in a way that was like, whoa, that is different. That's different.
Right. And it kind of showed to me again that, like, if you're performing and you have a puppet close to your face, you can't play a character and then also voice this character without using ventriloquism. I guess I was spoiled after that, because I've seen examples of that style and been like, it could be better. It could be better if you just did a little ventriloquism or kept it away from your face or something like that. Anyway.
I don't feel that way myself, but I thought that this was... When we speak about ventriloquism, people always just think of it as being one thing. It's comedy, it's stand-up, and that's what you do. And I always, especially after watching Jay Johnson's show, which shout out to Jay Johnson, because he really changed the way that I viewed ventriloquism, felt like there's so much more that could be done with it, but I just couldn't, like, and I couldn't ever think of, like, what that next step would be besides, like, there's a voice in a box and the box is, like, across the stage, you know, which mm-hmm. is what he does in the show and what ventriloquists used to do way back when. And this was an amazing use of it. Amazing.
So that was the scariest puppet show ever in the history. But my question to you, the audience, is if you have seen a scarier show, and a lot of puppeteers have seen a lot of shows, let us know. Send us either comments in this video over at facebook.com/wondersparkpuppets. Go to the website puppetparentpodcast.com. There's like a little message box, or shoot us an email, info@wondersparkpuppets.com. Puppet trivia. Before we wrap this up, puppet trivia. Do you know the very first scary puppet in cinema history?
The very first one?
Yes, because there's been so many great scary puppets, usually ventriloquist dummies, for a long time before we got to the 80s, where they were just everywhere.
Was it stop motion? Was stop motion puppet?
It was not, but it was a special effect.
A special effect. Early cinema. What, did the cinema have audio?
No, it was black and white, made in the 1800s.
Oh my.
Some of the very first films ever. So there was at the beginning of cinema, everybody was kind of experimenting, and somebody who's his name was, hold on a second, Georges Méliès, had a great idea, because he was a magician, and he was like, I can use this to do what I do on stage, but seamlessly. Mm-hmm. So he was the director and visionary behind A Trip to the Moon.
Oh, which yes.
Which you may have heard the moon of. That's right. Uh-huh. Rocket ship goes to the moon, and there's like a face in the moon, and gets a rocket in the eye.
Yes.
And adventures, the moon people. He also made other films.
So good.
Yeah, so he made a film, and you can see that. Just search on YouTube, Georges Méliès. I can't tell you the spelling, it's French. But he made a film, it's all black and white, where a skeleton marionette comes to life. Like, he keeps on like putting the skeleton bones down, and they keep popping up to life, and then he gets it to dance, and it transforms into an actual dancer, and then it transforms into a beautiful woman, and then he picks it up and throws it at a person, and it's back to bones.
Whoa.
He was all about these like jump cuts, but it was like everybody stop and then change something, and then boop, it's different.
The magic of cinema.
Yeah, and because nobody had any idea, nobody had ever seen films before, you didn't think about it.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine what that must have been like? Like, magic. What's that thing for us now?
VR.
Well, I was going to say VR, but I feel like you still get exposed to VR. But,
Yeah. You remember the first time, you remember I took you to, I took you to Madame Tussauds, and we did our very first backpacks on headsets virtual reality experience, because those are more widespread now, but it's more like they're not in homes, they're like a carnival trick, and they're expensive.
It was cool. It was a Ghostbusters themed one.
Yeah.
And you were walking through space, like, so you're physically moving with the VR goggles on. It was cool. Yeah. That was really cool.
So you're in a physical space, like you're in a room, and you're walking around the room. Then there was a trick where they're like, okay, go into the elevator, which was not a real elevator, right. By the way. But you go into it, you're looking, and you're like, that's an elevator. And then there's an elevator scene, and then you come out into the exact same space, by the way. But you're in a totally different space in the VR world. So it's tricking you in a lot of different ways you don't recognize in the moment.
There was one point where we're like, there's like a breeze, and you're like supposedly standing on the edge of a building.
You have to walk across in between two buildings.
Oh,
it's like
so
a plank.
Scary. It was so scary. I loved it. I loved that. That was a really great... that was for the launch of the all-female Ghostbusters movie.
Yes.
Which I also loved. I realize I'm in the minority there, but I thought everybody did a great job.
That's right. So, George Millier, he did a lot of films like that. There's one film where there's like an astronomer looking at the moon, and then he looks in the telescope, and then the moon is really big, like a big face, chomping mouth. And there's one where they go to this ice planet, and there's like this giant ice gnome king or something like that. They're worth checking out. And it was like over 100. Well, the cat is messing with the curtain now. There's over 120 years ago, which is incredible.
Wow.
What are you doing, cat?
Wow.
She's no man. Messing with the set.
That might be a sign, though, that we need to wrap it up.
That is true. So, I think that's it for Scare Puppets. I hope you all have a great Halloween.
I know. Happy hunting, happy haunting, happy Halloween. Mm-hmm. We're so excited to be back in New York City for Halloween this year. Like, it's really nice to be here for Halloween. Mm-hmm. There's an amazing Halloween parade that takes place in Manhattan that has tons of puppets. So if you're in New York City and you don't have kids and you're not going trick-or-treating, check out the Halloween parade. Because it's back this year, and that's a really great thing.
Yeah, started by puppeteers. I hope Basil Twist will bring on his giant spider like he does every year.
And the clock tower, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks so much, everybody. And a shout out to Mr. Thompson, who said hi. That's my elementary school principal, hey. And is so awesome. He's one of the best administrators of schools ever. Whenever I hear people talking about principals and administration, I always think I was so, so lucky to have Mr. Thompson for most of my elementary school time, because he was the best. He was the best.
Dang, all right.
Yeah, okay. And I babysat for his family.
Yay. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again, everyone. We are the Puppet Parent Podcast. You can check us out online at puppetparentpodcast.com. There you can find all the places where we have our MP3s. We're on Spotify. We're on all kinds of different platforms. And if you go to our website, you can just download the MP3s there. If you're a content hoarder like me, you listen to them many times, toss them on a hard drive, you know. You know, somebody has to archive these things, because sometimes your hosting company just goes under after you haven't done your podcast in a while. A lot of podcasts that I used to listen to, I can't find them anymore.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and that's not a plug for any kind of service. I'm just like, that. Literally, I was like, where are they?
Gone. Well, but, thank you all so much for listening, and we hope that you will continue to listen. We have a lot of great things coming up, and we will see you next time.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know when the next podcast will be.
We're trying to do it at least a couple times a month. Sorry, our cat is going crazy over there. We're trying to do it a couple times a month at least. So we're figuring out the schedule for it, but we're trying to be more consistent. So,
yeah. All right. Thanks again, everybody.
Bye. Happy Halloween.